Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. The Dow and S&P are lower. NASDAQ is higher. We've got gold up 620 the ounce to 1175, a gain there of 0.5%. Crude oil continues its advance up 1% today. West Texas Intermediate up 52 cents a barrel, 51.58 on WTI. So little change for equity markets after this morning's jobs report. The S&P 500 index down by less than half a point. Dow Industrials down 27, a drop there of 0.1%. NASDAQ also little changed. It is up now by 1 point. I'm Charlie Pellett. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Thank you very much, Charlie Pellett. Well, it is 11:47 in the Bay Area and 2:47 on Wall Street.
The following is from Bloomberg View. Opinions and commentary from Bloomberg columnists.
I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg View. Let's say you want to reduce the U.S. trade deficit. President-elect Donald Trump has said repeatedly that he does. And it's not just him. Economists from the political left and center have also been making the argument that big trade deficits are hurting working-class Americans. So how do you make them smaller? Well, if you're the president or a member of Congress, the most straightforward way is to reduce the gap between federal spending and tax revenue. You know, the budget deficit. That's because, as a country, we can't buy more than we sell from other countries unless we borrow from other countries to cover the difference. And while that borrowing can be private or public, the government has limited ability to affect private spending and saving, which leaves the federal budget as the main tool policymakers have to reduce U.S. borrowing from other countries, and with it, the trade deficit. None of this necessarily means that reducing the budget deficit ought to be a top priority for the incoming president. But you may sense the looming conflict here. The economic policy plans that Donald Trump floated during his campaign would increase the budget deficit by a lot. So the trade deficit is more likely to grow in the coming years than shrink. I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg View. For more Bloomberg opinion and commentary, please go to BloombergView.com or View Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg View.
Bloomberg View commentaries can be heard every weekday at this time, also at 5:48 in the morning, 8:48 in the morning, 11:48 in the morning, all Wall Street time.
Well, a brand new day in the next chapter for Italy certainly could start Sunday when Italian voters will vote on whether or not to reject a constitutional change to streamline the legislative process. It's a decision that could lead Prime Minister Matteo Renzi to resign. Let's get more with Jacob Kierkegaard. He's senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics, joining us on the phone from Washington, D.C. Mark Grant, also with us, chief strategist at Hilltop Securities, on the phone as well from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Jacob, I want to kick it off with you. What are your expectations for this weekend?
Well, I mean, I got to say, I think it's very open. If you believe the last polls we have, which are about 2 weeks old, the no is going to win at a relatively narrow pace. But I think the reality is that this is a very open open vote, high levels of uncertainty. So I really don't have any major expectations other than I don't believe that whatever happens on Monday morning, I don't think you'll have a major market shakeup, because I think at the end of the day, a no vote is probably what is most priced into markets today. And even if it's a yes, the relief rally will be relatively muted.
Interesting. Now, we, of course, as we look at these, you know, the environment's completely different right now that we've got one country leaving the EU. That the relationship with the EU can be completely different for every country. The possibilities are now changed.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we need to draw a distinction here to say that, well, even if it's a no, and Prime Minister Renzi follows through on his promise to resign, I think it's highly unlikely that we will have early elections in Italy. And I even think that it would be highly unlikely that the five-star movement would win, which is the populist party in Italy, would win such early elections. And therefore, drawing this sort of immediate line, a straight line between a no in the referendum and Italy having a populist government and potentially at some nondescript time in the future dropping out of the EU and or the euro, I think that is remains a very, very low probability.
Mark Grant, I want to bring you in, Chief Strategist over at Hilltop Securities. Mark, I was looking at some of the research you've, you know, shared with us, and you had sent out a note today how December 4th could trigger the most violent economic shock in, I guess, in what?
In a long time.
Yeah.
You know, talking about the possibility here, I do feel like it's going to be a no vote. I spoke with a number of people in Italy, and I'm getting that pretty much across the board. Then, of course, as Jacob says, whether Prime Minister Renzi resigns or not is an open question, though he said he would. And if he does resign, it will throw the country into a new election cycle. And with Italy, with the highest budget deficit of all the countries in Europe, it could get more than just a little bit interesting.
You know, I've been talking about Christine Lagarde, head of the IMF, has been here at Bloomberg and did a lunch presentation. And she was questioned by our managing editor, John Micklethwaite, about the Italian referendum. And she says, you know, we look at Italy, independent. We look at the Italian economy independent of the referendum and whether or not Renzi stays. Independent of all this, a lot has to be done with the Italian banks. So whatever the outcome, Mark, we just got it. They've got to deal with those Italian banks. That's not going to go away no matter what.
That's correct, Carol. And Italy, you know, really is becoming more like a Greece. It's certainly moving away from the French model or the German model. And the economy is getting very troubled. Their banks are, without question, in very bad shape. And they keep saying they can do something with the main ones. And I have doubts if they can accomplish that. So I'm looking for a little more trouble on the horizon than Jacob is looking for at the present time.
How do you think that will manifest itself?
Well, they're trying to do a swap in Monte Pesce, and I don't think they're going to be able to accomplish it in a way that prevents them from actually going into default as declared by S&P or Moody's or both. And then the smaller Italian banks, I think, are also in a lot of trouble. And, you know, these banks passed the European bank stress test, and, of course, there are two ways of fiddling with that, if you will. One is by the count, and two is by the methodology used to make the count. And it was clear to me that the methodology last time was skewed, and they're now down to the point where they have to do something, and whether they're able to put together some refinancing package without pushing some of these banks in default, I think is very questionable.
Jacob, come on in. Jacob Kierkegaard, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. When you look at those Italian banks, you know, how do you see it playing out and how they're handled ultimately?
No, I mean, I agree that if it's a no, I would certainly expect the Monte dei Paschi capital campaign to fail. I would expect that bank to either receive some sort of limited a government bailout that that the government will agree with the European Union. But nonetheless, I think in a case of no, this is a bank that is looking at either being significantly downsized, restructured, and possibly even resolved. And I think the same in the case of a no will be true for a number of the smaller regional popolari banks in Italy, because I absolutely agree that the Italian banking system is something that you can no longer kick down kick that can further down the road, and the day of reckoning will come fairly soon after the referendum in the event of a no. But I would still argue that I don't think this is going to lead to a systemic run, if you like, on the Italian banking system as a whole.
What would the sort of ancillary effects be if that bank is allowed to fail, and how might that happen?
Well, if it's allowed to fail, the European rules today are fairly straightforward. Then you would go through sort of FDIC-like process where you're having bailing in of shareholders, subordinate bondholders, and even senior bondholders. And the political ramifications in Italy of such a bondholder bail-in could be quite significant, because you have this particular problem in the Italian banking system that in the course of many years, retail depositors were basically sold subordinated bank bonds by the banks with the sort of under the nose of Italian regulators. So they're going to respond very negatively to that, which is almost certainly going to create additional political crisis. So the fallout politically could be quite significant. I don't actually think that the sort of financial market turnaround, even in the banking sector, is going to undermine the other major capital drive that is underway in Italy, which is that by Unicredito, which is the biggest Italian bank. I think that they will be able to raise capital under almost any circumstances, even in the case of a no. So again, certainly volatility, but no systemic run, in my opinion.
Mark Grant, 10 seconds. Do you agree?
I agree in part with Jacob. I think that there won't be a systemic run. I think UniCredit will be able to raise capital, but I think it's going to be worse than generally thought, and the problems with the EU are going to be significant in terms of the way the bailout is handled.
All right. Mark Grant of Hilltop Securities, thank you. Jacob Kierkegaard at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.